This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope.
I have these notes, but I gotta say I'm just fired up to be here today.
And the Bulldog.
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo!
On WGR.
Come on. Get up if you're as psyched as I am.
Sports Radio 550.
All right, there are a lot of fans around here who might sound like that these days. We're going to talk to Joe Marino now from the Draft Network and Locked On Bills on Twitter at the Joe Marino. That's what Twitter calls him. I like to think of him as G.I. Joe because he's from Grand Island, but I don't know. You shouldn't use a nickname, Joe, of someone that you don't have their approval, right? Like you should have to sign off or get to sign off on that, I think. It's only fair.
Right. I should have at least had the courtesy to ask Ohio State if I could have the in front of my name on Twitter.
Right. That too. All right. Well, we're talking with one of the most notable Grand Island football authorities, Brett Kern, by the way. Do you ever use that, Joe, that Brett Kern is from the island? Did you know that? Tennessee punter?
I didn't. No, that's good information. I'm glad to know that now.
All right, good. So, I mean, of course, here, Joe, 2-0. How impressed are you and how surprised are you?
I think the Bills did a good job of, I mean, obviously very impressive to start the season 2-0 with two road wins. Impressed, I think, is probably, that might be a strong word. I think encouraged is where I'm probably at, particularly with the growth of Josh Allen becoming a more complete quarterback, showing the ability to work the football to the short and intermediate areas of the field.
Joe, you still there?
I'm really yes.
Yeah,
I,
good.
I,
I'm sorry.
Sorry, you clipped out for a second.
Yeah, you went away there
for a little bit.
Sorry.
So, yeah, the encourage is the buzzword for me when it comes to this 2-0 start, particularly the performance of Josh Allen.
Yeah, The way that they've scored their points, Joe, is really something to me. They've had six touchdown drives, and they've all been 70 yards or more. There's a 98-yarder in there from Sunday. There's an 85-yarder, I think, in the Jet game. That's Josh Allen being precise and being accurate and, you know, piloting them on 10, 11, 13-play drives. And that's just not – I mean – I didn't expect that. I mean, completion percentage is 64, which is much better. It's still not like good for top half of the league because that stat just guys are better and better at it. But I think that's the most pleasant surprise so far is that they've gotten touchdowns and they haven't been on lightning strikes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to substantiate the growth, right, is that the Bills are sustaining long touchdown drives and not relying so much on big plays where – towards the end of last season, it was Josh Allen throwing the ball down the field or him running it, either or. That's how they were matriculating the football. And now it's a lot more of Josh being in command of the offense and keeping it on schedule. A lot of really impressive third down throws, particularly in that Giants game towards the end. And that's really a good way to measure the growth of this football team. And just, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions as well about how that maybe has come at the expense of some big plays. But I think that's going to come. I am more encouraged by the growth of the team being more consistent on offense than I am discouraged by not seeing as many deep balls hit down the field like we came accustomed to seeing towards the end of the year last year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that that's just more sustainable really needs to be the word here probably.
All right, and you also probably can pretty reasonably expect that you're going to get some of those plays eventually out of Allen anyways.
No question, and obviously there's a timing component. You know, John Brown and Josh Allen have showed great chemistry so far with his, you know, first two games of the season. But, he missed the deep throws to him against the Giants, and a lot of people are talking about that. I think that timing piece of it will come, and you'll see those deep plays start to be hit. The interesting thing is the guy that was on the receiving end of those deep plays last year, Robert Foster, has been pretty much non-existent in the offense. And so It'd be interesting if the Bills could get them both going, perhaps on some vertical shots. But right now, John Brown and Josh Allen, they've got to get on the same page and get that timing down the field.
With Joe Marino here on WGR from Locked On Bills and also the Draft Network, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog with you. So, Joe, we watch these two games on TV, and, you know, you see the Bills, you see Allen take the snap, and then he throws it, and a guy's open. And, you know, what are you supposed to think? One thing you're going to think is that Allen is doing better. He's reading the play right and delivering the ball accurately, like we're talking about. Another is the scheme here, and I feel like that might deserve a lot of credit. And then you have the opponents, you know, like the Giants made me wonder if they're just maybe really bad. So, you know, pick what you want there. I just think what more is really happening right now that accounts for how it's looked?
I think I see a lot of comfort from Josh Allen pre-snap. And, you know, one thing that I picked up from a press conference that I was at actually this summer with David Cutcliffe, the head coach of Duke. Everyone knows him from his work with the Manning brothers and, of course, Daniel Jones. One thing he really got into was the difference between whether or not completion percentage was a measure of accuracy. And he really argued that completion percentage is more about pre-snap reads and understanding where to go with the football. And I think that's what I've seen from Josh is more than anything, him being more comfortable with what he's seen pre-snap. Obviously, some of that comes from Brian Daboll and scheming some things up with some motions, moving Patrick DeMarco out wide in situations to create easy man zone reads. And then credit to Josh Allen for really putting that together and executing post-snap based on what he's learning pre-snap. So I think it is a combination of scheme and Josh Allen just becoming more comfortable. The game's slowing down for him, and he has a lot more comfort compared to what we saw last year.
Some of that has to be a product of him being the number one guy here through the spring and the summer and like just and doing the work. You know, you got to do the work. Just being the number one guy isn't alone going to get it done, but it does a value of more attention from the coaches and certainly more opportunity to work on things in practice and get all those reps. So I think that's got to be at least one of the byproducts is that progress that he's done that work and he has some better idea what the heck he's looking at when he's standing there.
Well, there's no question, and the Bills have done so well to improve literally everything around him, whether it's an offensive line coach, quarterback coach, wide receiver coach, better personnel on offensive line, defense, and wide receiver. But in addition to, you know, Josh Allen being the guy from day one, and last year at this point in time, he had shared reps all offseason long with McCarron and Peterman, and arguably I think you can make a good case that the Bills didn't anticipate playing Josh Allen as soon as they did, and Nate Peterman just played so poorly they had to put him in the lineup. And so he's running Nate Peterman's offense for the first several games, and then finally he goes out of the lineup and comes back in, and you saw really the growth start to happen right then and there where there's just more comfort. And so that offseason meant a lot for Josh Allen in a lot of different ways.
Thank you for saying that. That is a point that I've made a lot. We heard all last year about the process, and once in a while, especially if I was in a mood, Joe, I'd be like, tell me again about what the process was here when Allen was supposed to play, because he, you know, they had the competition and everything. But you know what? It doesn't really ultimately matter. It's a happy accident, I guess, in a weird, twisted way that Peterman went down like that, just like it was one that Drew Bledsoe got hurt for the Patriots. You know, like just it happened that way. Dare I make that comparison? So if you look at you know, the division, one way of looking at the division right now, as you start to think playoffs, maybe, Joe, is the AFC East is New England, which still looks like New England, the Bills, and two teams that are 20-point underdogs this week. Like, I don't know if you're an odds guy, but what kind of odds do you think there are on the Bills finishing at worst second this year already? Like, is this a sort of crazy leap to make this early?
Well, you certainly anticipate the Bills finishing higher than the Dolphins, who surprised if they win a game this year, but the Jets have really been extremely unlucky. Now, I think they've had their own issues with some inopportune investments in their offensive line and obviously hiring Adam Gase and Greg Williams is a very questionable hires, and so some of that's on themselves, but obviously their injury situation is very unlucky, and the Bills are playing well, and to their credit, I think the Bills are in the driver's seat to be the second-place team, and I mean, I think it's way too early to talk about contending with New England for the AFC East, but I don't think there's much of a case to be made for any other team besides the Bills that being number two in the AFC East right now.
Right.
Yeah, that is something here. I mean, the division, we'll see. You know, they'll play in a couple of weeks, and hopefully You know, the Bills will take care of business with the Bengals. I'd expect the Patriots to beat the Jets. I'm sorry, I can't even say it without laughing. But, you know, if the division is still closed off, that's fine. The way things are shaking out in the conference here, we got Roethlisberger's hurt and Luck retired. The Jets are without Darnold and already 0-2. The Browns, to me, don't look like what maybe we expected them to be. There's still a lot of time for them to wind into form, of course. Like the Chargers maybe are injured, and that's hurting them. Like, it feels like the door's opening a little bit in the conference.
I agree with you. And the one team that kind of comes up, you mentioned a lot of the teams that I think maybe not be what we thought they would be, but how about Baltimore as a team that, yeah, you know, looks like that's going to be a tough game for the Bills, especially with the speed that they have. And I'd argue that the Bills don't have great speed in their secondary, although they're a very good pass defense. And so, I think Baltimore is a team now on the flip side of that that gives me some concern about what they could potentially be this year.
With Joe Marino on WGR, well, you've published for the Draft Network a draft board already, and I don't even know if in your world that constitutes already. Maybe of course I have, could be what you're thinking. It's September into the college season. But, you know, you said before you'd be surprised if Miami won a game, and I'm sure you recognize what that is to say, you know, after two games, because, you know, we've almost never had 0-16 just a couple times. Let's talk about that a little bit, and whether you think they're, you know, they've got other picks too, with the trade last night included. Like, how optimistic would you be for the Dolphins after this year?
Well, you know, I think the challenging thing with this Dolphin situation is obviously they've done a good job of creating draft capital, but they've also created a lot of holes, right? And part of these draft picks that they're going to turn around and use are going to be on players like Minkah Fitzpatrick and like Laremy Tunsil. So, you know, on one hand, they're acquiring that capital, but at the same time, they're continuing to deplete their roster. A lot of picks, a lot of needs, you know, and it's very interesting because I think one thing that the Bills could kind of, you could look at the Bills example here over the last few years and really see that something that's been very important to what we believe is turning of the page here for the Bills is they have a veteran in every single room. And they've been very good to complement their young players with veterans around them. What's Miami's course to do that? You know, that's what's interesting to me. They're going to get all these young players, but is the infrastructure really going to be ripe to bring in a young rookie quarterback with the number one overall pick? Is there going to be enough meaningful veterans on this roster? I think it's a legitimate question because you can have all the young talent in the world, but if there's no example set by veterans in the room, it's going to become challenging. And this team has so many holes. They have a lot of cap space, but who's going to really be their marquee guys that they're going to be able to bring in there as veterans in free agency? We saw Jadeveon Clowney did not want to go there. And, you know, Trey Flowers picked Detroit, and their own players went out of the building. So it's exciting to see them acquire some draft capital, but they're a long ways away, and I'm not sure how quickly this thing gets turned around.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, they did great to get the picks that they got in the Tunsil trade and now the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, but those players are still young enough to me that they'd be guys you'd want on your team when you're, you know, when you draft Tua or whomever to be your quarterback, and those are very curious moves, I think.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it goes back to they're going to bring in a young quarterback. We've seen guys like Josh Rosen go into that Arizona situation. It was just so bad around him that Josh Rosen's really set back in his growth. And, you know, other quarterbacks that just go with Derek Carr with Houston when he first came out. You can't just introduce your young quarterback, as talented as they are, to a situation where they're just set up to fail. And so they got a lot of work ahead of them. And I'd be concerned that they can get the right mix of veterans to complement the rookies and young players to get this thing on track like they hope. So we'll see. They got to make these picks count. But I'm curious about where they're going to get the veterans to complement the rest of the roster.
Joe Marino from the Draft Network here on the Western Hotline with us. How about the other end of that Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, that it's the Steelers that go get him? With Roethlisberger out for the year, they cough up a first-round pick, which, you know, without their quarterback, could be tracking towards a first-round pick. That leads you to Mason Rudolph. What did you think of him coming out, and did you look at what he did on Sunday? Is it possible that the Steelers could salvage the year here with him playing quarterback for them?
Yeah, it's curious, right? An 0-2 team that just lost a starting quarterback traded away their next year's first-round pick. And now, I think it'd be the first time in 57 years the Steelers didn't have a first-round pick. It's very, very different for them. I think this is, if anything, a real sign that they have some belief in Mason Rudolph to be that guy, and some confidence there, and some digging that I've been able to do over the last 24 hours or so has led me to believe that they believe in Mason Rudolph, and so that's kind of the interesting layer here. As far as my opinion of Rudolph coming out is, I thought he's a guy that had a chance to be a starter. I graded him as a day two prospect, a late day two prospect, and you saw a player that has some tools. He has decent enough arm talent. He has good ability to work the football down the field and hit spot throws. But, it was a big jump from him coming out of the air raid system there at Oklahoma State to an NFL offense. And then you saw him struggle last year in the preseason. You really didn't get a lot of confidence that he could be the guy. But then this year in preseason, it felt like you were watching a different player. And so maybe some of that growth, and obviously before Ben went down, they traded Josh Dobbs. So they knew when they traded Josh Dobbs that they were a snap away from this being their circumstance. And they were comfortable with it, and now it's here. So I'm anxious to see how he does, and I think he has a chance. I don't think he has a high ceiling, but I think he has a chance.
Joe, one more thing maybe. So, of course, we have, five or six of these quarterbacks the three of us have talked about leading into drafts in the last couple of years that are going in. Luke Falk is now starting. Daniel Jones, of course. Gardner Minshew, is maybe even good. Whatever happens in Carolina, there's two guys to pick from where you are in Carolina. Like, you have one of these names, maybe including Rudolph, perhaps. That might be appropriate. One of these names that you're, the most curious or excited about, and maybe one where you just have the least hope?
I'll tell you, I don't get excited about too many of those names at all. But I like the situation for Rudolph. I will say that Pittsburgh has one of the best offensive lines in football, and that matters a lot, right? They have a Pro Bowl running back in James Conner. They have a Pro Bowl receiver in Juju Smith-Schuster and some other young receivers that they've drafted recently. And they also have Vance McDonald, who's a quality tight end. And they also had a top-six defense last year that got a lot of pressure on the quarterback with some pieces there that are going to make that unit better, potentially with Devin Bush and Steven Nelson and now Minka Fitzpatrick. So I like the makeup of that roster enough for that infrastructure to be good enough around Mason for him to succeed. On the flip side of that, you asked me for the one I'm least excited about. That would be Luke Falk. Luke Falk with the Jets, who I really thought he was a very limited player coming out of Washington State. I didn't think he had really the baseline traits that you're looking for. No, he's a smart guy, right? But, smart guys wind up being offensive coordinators like Kellen Moore, or then they are starting quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't know that he has the baseline physical skill set to really give them much, and obviously I'm pretty down on Adam Gase and his scheme.
No question it was time to do something with the Giants. Are you optimistic for Daniel Jones based on his preseason, or do you just sort of throw that out?
I hope so. I'm rooting for Daniel Jones. I got a chance to spend a good amount of time with him up at Duke. I've done probably five or six of his games over the last 2 years. I obviously saw him at the Senior Bowl. He's a good guy. He loves football. He's a good person. He works really hard. And he there's a lot of criticism towards the Giants for that pick, and I think feel like some of that's been miscast towards Daniel Jones, and there's a lot of venom towards Gettleman in that situation. But Daniel Jones doesn't deserve any of that, and he's a guy that has a chance to be at least a quality starter in the NFL. I don't know that he has the physical tools to really be a plus starter, but can he be an Andy Dalton or a Kirk Cousins type quarterback? I certainly think that he can, and obviously the dynamics of that situation kind of makes me root for him to succeed.
All right, great to talk to you again, Joe. Any questions for us today?
I should have known you were going to ask me that, but I don't have any questions for you this time. But
all right.
Thanks very much. Always a good conversation with you guys.
Thank you. Before you go, I'm wondering if you ever run into Eric Wood, like in the ACC or anything.
Oh, I had a great conversation with Eric Wood at ACC kickoff here in Charlotte. It was in July. He was in the building, and I wrote an article for the Draft Network based on my conversation with him about offensive linemen and their acclimation to the NFL and flipping guys from the left side to the right side, guard, tackle, all that type of stuff, really kind of with Cody Ford in my mind is kind of the genesis of that conversation. And I kind of put that all together in an article. I have to tweet that out for you guys to get a look at that. But
great.
Him and I had a really good talk about that situation.
Yeah, we're big fans of his. He was on our show every Monday after games when he was playing. And what I've heard about him so far on games here is that he's doing an exceptional job. And he's really after it too, like the ACC stuff. He might have Syracuse this week.
Yes, he does.
And then,
Yeah, maybe he's
very approachable.
Yep.
Yep.
He might be going places. I mean, not that he's not already in
going
a good place, but he might be going, you know, he seems like he's really digging into this, so that's
very
awesome.
Good.
He's very talented. I mean, he's a good writer, he's a good podcaster, he's a good broadcaster. I mean, not only a good blocker, but he certainly has a career in content creation and journalism.
Yeah,
he's
so all those, well. All those Mondays we spent grooming him, that's what it is there.
Yeah, that's
no
he learned it. He learned it here. Yeah. Sure he did. All right, thank you, Joe. Talk to you soon.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.